As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ready, Howler?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be for a while anyway, for sure.
Well, we've been trying to put this episode together for a little while. We had such a great response to Steve, the Army Ranger, when he was on our paranormal episode talking about some crazy stuff that we thought he'd be good to bring on and do an episode of the Midweek Howl with me and you. So we'll just bring him on. What do you say?
Sounds great.
All right, Steve, welcome. Welcome to the big show, the Midweek Howl. How's things in Louisiana right now?
Well, they're hot and dry right now. Even the skeeters are going ahead and have hoods over them from the heat. But I'll tell you what, it keeps them from biting us, so we're all right.
we talked a while ago, and you had a pretty cool career in the Army, and you had a real crazy kind of law enforcement career when you got out, and that's why I thought you and the Howler make a good pair. So you kind of indicated to me you had some stories from your work life that would be kind of interesting to share. So you want to dive into some stuff, and we'll just listen, and I'm sure the Howler will chime in if he's got something.
Oh, I mean, I got some stories. I mean, I don't know how deep you want to go with these things, but, my career, I worked for Bogart Parish Sheriff's Office and the BPSO, and I also worked under retired from the Department of Corrections here in Louisiana.
So, and, like at Angola, or where was you at?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. I worked in Angola.
You down on the farm?
I worked on the farm. I was the one with the shotgun back of the hootenanny, we called it, hauling them inmates, so all over the farm and everything.
That's right. A lot of these people, especially our foreign listeners, won't realize how big it is. Tell us a little bit about it and how it got its name.
Well, Angola is a state penitentiary for Louisiana. Big. It's when I was there, we had 6,500 inmates over there, all it is they call it the farm, and what it is nothing but a conglomeration of several different camps. And you had the main prison, which the inmates called it, New York City, because it was so big, and you had 3,000 inmates in that one facility right there in the middle of the farm. And then you had Camp C, and you had Camp D, and you had Camp F, and you had Death Row, and they had all the inmates been put to death, and you had just a huge, huge camp. And then you had Camp J. I spent a lot of time working at Camp J. Of course, I was there back when Burl Cain was warden. And I worked for Burl Cain for a long time. I also knew his son, Nate, real well. I worked for him. He was a warden over at ABC, Bulls Correctional Center, Tottenport, Louisiana. I worked for him for several years as well. And Cain was pretty popular, you know, in the prison systems around the country. But over there at in Angola, it was in Camp J, pretty much when you went in that gate, that front gate, you of course, you're ex-law enforcement, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You got to be someone different. When you cross that threshold to a compound, you got to be someone different than when you were at home. And you become a different person, attitude-wise, mentally, everything. And how we say it in law enforcement, man, when you cross that threshold, better have it on your mind, because it's fixing to bust wide open. You don't know what to expect. It goes from 0 to 90 just like that. And so working at Camp J, go inside there, and we had body count rosters. When you come on new shift, you walk through there, and your body count rosters wasn't to go ahead and count the live ones, it was to count the dead ones, the ones that got murdered overnight.
Right.
Oh, geez. You're walking, I understand, you know, a lot of people have a hard concept of, well, you know, I knew someone in prison for 5 years, 10 years, and they got out. That's your other kind of prisons. Those are your, you know, class A prisons, stuff like that. When you got in, getting to Angola, you know, in penitentiaries, you're talking about people who got their lifers. They got 2, 3, 4 life sentences. They ain't going nowhere. And so
some of them have been 30, 40 years. Some of the older men haven't they?
Oh, yes, sir. You got guys who were 75, 80 years old locked up over there, been locked up 65, 70 years. I'm on both their lives. I mean, that's all they know. This is their way of life now. And it's all they know. And, you know, and those older inmates, and believe it or not, the ones who, you know, committed a murder or something like that back
in the best ones, aren't they?
Yeah, well, they're the ones that are pretty straight. When they're 75, 80 years old, they're straight. They've actually rehabilitated themselves over those years, and they ain't the same person no more. However, not all of them, most of them that way. The younger ones, the ones that just got locked up 5, 10 years ago for multiple murders, those are the ones that you're going to have to deal with. And, you know, when we, you know, had to do cell entries and that kind of thing, we call it 5x5. And I was always the lead man, so they give me the shield. And the shield had a taser on top and bottom. I had 4 officers behind me. We suited up, went into the cell. And understand, when you understand, you go into a cell. These guys here are like wild animals. They cut, scratch. They're going to have shanks. They're going to bite. They're like wild animals, like a wild tiger. They have nothing to lose. You know, what are you going to do? Give them another life sentence? They already got 2. You know, so what are they going to lose? So you go inside there. You're dealing with someone who just flat out doesn't give a dang. So it's a bloodbath is what happens. And we go inside there, and oh, my goodness, son, it's crazy. And so I'm trying to keep all the gore out of it because there's some rough stuff. But any case, so every day we went inside there, it's something new. And you had different levels. You know, in Camp J, you had level 1, level 2, and level 3. Inmates first going to Camp J, which is a disciplinary camp on Angola. And you get food loaf. They get eat food loaf for the first 3 months. And a food loaf is basically whatever the mess hall is serving, the chow hall is serving. If they're serving eggs and they're serving sausage and grits, okay, then you get that food loaf is a loaf full of eggs, grits, and sausage. Now, that don't sound too awful bad. Let's up at the lunchtime. In lunchtime, they're going to get maybe what they call mystery meat, which is a mixture of meat. You know what that was, what they call mystery meat. It's a mystery.
Is it really that bad when they say mystery
meat? Oh, look, it's pretty rough. I mean, when you're looking at what these guys, you know, are getting fed, now Angola, they did feed them pretty good. I have to admit that. The other prisons I went to, I worked at, my goodness, son, I wouldn't feed them to a dog. But Angola did take care of their inmates. And the philosophy that Earl Cain had on that, you know, was to go ahead and feed them good, because it all circles around the chow hall. You go ahead and feed the inmates good, keep them in a decent mood. They won't have less problems on there, because you got 6,500 inmates on that complex, and you only got 500 officers. If there's a riot, guess what's going to happen? So you really got to have it together. And he had a good plan of action on that. And so, But I mean, Food Loaf at lunchtime, you had mystery meat, you had corn, and you had peas, and you had Jell-O. It's all mixed in the Food Loaf, even the Jell-O. So,
wait a second. That's all mixed in together in a loaf?
Mixed in together, yes, sir. This is to get their mind right. It's to go ahead and hey, disciplinarian, and that's how they do it over there. And it's pretty rough, but, you know, these guys don't want it. And the rule was, if they turned away when you put that tray in the bean hole in Camp J, and they turn it away, they throw it against the wall or something, push it out, hey, it's time for get suit up, go inside and deal with them. And I had one inmate one time, he told me, I don't want it. I said, man, look, you got a chance to take this right here. You better take it. You know what's going to happen. You know what time it is if this you push this tray away. He said, I'm telling you right now, Sarge, I don't want it. And that's all he had to say. I said, that tray threw it against the wall, wham. Next thing I knew, hit that beeper, and here they come, son, it's on. And he knew what time it was, and he got dealt with. It's just a mindset and what we had to maintain over there. And like I said, I'm trying to keep with more of the milder things. I don't want to go.
Well, I got to say, how bad was the food that you would rather take a butt whooping than eat the food? That had to be pretty bad.
What, did you lose him?
Oh, I think he hit the thing with his ear. Uh-oh. Steve?
I see him on.
I know. I see him on. I think he hit the thing with his ear. Well, let's talk till he gets back on then.
Yeah. Well,
how bad would that loaf have to be?
I think in some ways it's not. I think it's a principle, you know, because a lot of them are upset that they're locked up and they don't realize that, you know, it's all fun and games. I don't want to say fun and games. Hey, I'm going to get out. My lawyer's going to beat it. I'm going to beat the rap. The cops are lying. And then they finally go to court, and then, especially real bad people, right? So when we had bad people at a trial, especially your people, long-term offenders, if they're going to prison for 10 or 20 or 30 years, the day that they're sentenced, a lot of times, we would take them off the elevator, put them in a cop car, and bring them straight, especially your death row people or your people facing life. Within 30 minutes of them being sentenced, they are in a car being taken to prison where they don't mess with them anymore. So then they get to prison, and after 2 or 3 days, it's especially the younger people, it's really crossing their mind that it's for real now, you know?
Oh yeah.
So a lot of it is just, you know, they need to lash out at something, and the only power they have is that food tray.
Oh gosh. But I mean, it doesn't sound like it was any joke. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really got beat down for not eating.
Especially, well, that's a real, that's a, I wouldn't even tell you, I think that prison's about the size of Rhode Island. Well, so 7,000 people doesn't do it justice. It's named after Angola, which is where the plantation and the majority of the original plantation was farmed by black slaves from the country of Angola. That's why it's called Angola. And it's one of the toughest prisons in the world.
Wow. I looked up just so I could tell what the Mansfield Reformatory was, and it's ground. So do you know how big the grounds were in Angola? Because the grounds for the Mansfield Reformatory were like 40 acres, which, hey, that's a good chunk, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the, okay, so Steve left, so let's add him back on here. Everybody's going to they're going to play producer with us right now. So call it back. Before, you know, and I think Mansfield at one time had about 3 or 4,000.
There we go.
Steve, you're back. All right.
I'm sorry. I lost you there. It's good, son. I need signals out here like the skeeters. They fly here, fly there, and you lose it quick.
So the Howard and I were just kind of talking, you know, how big was the piece of land there at Angola?
Oh, Angola was acres. It was, my goodness. Oh, good God. I can't remember the exact acreage of it.
Here, I'm going to look it up real quick.
Because I looked up the Mansfield Reformatory, which is here where they, you know, shot Shawshank and stuff. And it had 40 acres that went with it. And that's pretty good size. But
this is probably bigger now. I'm sure it is, because we used to hunt. Earl Cain used to allow us to hunt, deer hunt, backside of the compound. Now, it's
18,000 acres, 28
square
miles.
18,000. How many square miles?
Well, it's surrounded by the Mississippi River. Goes around it. And so it was designed to where they couldn't get off there. So yeah, it's been a lot of acreage. Matter of fact, when you come off of out of St. Francisville, which is where Gangola's is, it's to the front gate off Highway 66. It's 20 miles to the front gate, nothing but woods. And so it's stationed out there in the middle of nowhere.
Good Lord, did anybody? I mean, it'd be a day and a half after you escaped to get to the road.
Oh, if they could even make it. Yeah, exactly how it's designed, because it's been there since the 1800s. It was the oldest compound in the state of Louisiana. And the second oldest compound was Phelps Correctional Center, which was stationed, it was out in De Quincey, Louisiana. They used to call it Little Angola. I worked there too, believe it or not. So, you know, but it was that's quarter across the other side of the state. But any case, Angola was massive. And they had the Angola Rodeo, I think, every October.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They was... warden that you mentioned, he was famous for letting them rodeo there, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And them inmates can make some things. Let me tell you what. Them inmates can make, I mean, furniture, things that you would, I mean, if they was on the outside, they'd be millionaires, because beautiful, beautiful work they do. Of course, that's all they have time to do. You know, they're locked up 24/7. So they made them, they have those craft shops all over the compounds where they can go ahead and they can stay up to 3-4 in the morning, you know, officers, of course, watching them, and make their items they're going to do for the shows to go ahead and sell in the rodeo. And folks would come from all over Louisiana, Texas, everywhere to go ahead and come to the rodeo and buy what they want. Matter of fact, there was an inmate there that he worked for Gibson and a guitar company, and he made handmade instruments for Willie Nelson and different singers, entertainers. And when I was there, I was talking to him, and I told him, I said, look, he'd been locked up at the time about 36 years, triple homicides, and he wasn't going nowhere. And so he was so good at what he did that Earl Cain had him his own craft shop made. It's the only one he can use. He had a key to it and everything. Did things by hand, didn't use any equipment, no lathes, nothing. Everything was made by hand, all his instruments was. He was known for that on the outside. Well, I asked him, can you make me a banjo? Because I love playing banjo. And he said, I'll make you a banjo. He said, that one of a kind. We'll never see one like it again. And I said, all right, get after it. So it took him a year. And while I was working there, he'd come by my drop where I was at. He'd come by and show me his progress, what he was doing. He made it out of a curly maple log. And the bark on the outside and everything, the moss still on the outside to this day. It's still on the outside of that banjo. And he put it together by hand. And talk about beautiful. My goodness, he inlaid turquoise arrowheads for turning tuning dots and in there, made the neck out of sycamore. Beautiful wood. And I play it in the church band. So I play it every Sunday. I go up there and I'll play it every once in a while. Pull out the case, and my goodness, it's just amazing what he did in that year's time.
Did that cost you anything, or he just did it?
Yeah, I needed $400 is what I paid him. That's all he was allowed to go ahead and get for it was $400. And so I paid him that. They put it in the rodeo just to see what it would do. Warden Cain told me, he said, we'll just put it here to see what it'll draw. He said, we're not as far as, you know, ribbon wise, they judge everything, all the things that, you know, furniture and such they make. And they put it in there in the ribbon, in the rodeo, and it won the blue ribbon, you know, overall. And so I was really proud of that. And it's just, my goodness, what a talent. And these guys have got tremendous talents.
I wonder if there's any of those guys' guitars out there. Like, did it have a brand or a name attached to it?
Oh, he put his name on it. He engraved his name with a burner, you know, on the head of the banjo, and he went ahead and that's all he did. Everything was personally made by him. And he made one of my partners where I worked with over there, another officer, doesn't play guitar, but he said, can you make me a guitar? And he smoked cigars. He had real fancy cigars and had that wooden cigar box. So he gave it to him, and then he took it and made a guitar out of it, out of a cigar box. And I went over his house when he went ahead, because he lives in the same town I do, and I went over his house once he got it from him and played it. I said, man, I tell you what, it's amazing what these guys can do. But I want to tell you this one story I had over there. I had one feller, and he was kind of throwed off. Of course, you know, most of them was, but he was kind of throwed off. Good old boy. I mean, talking to him was like talking to, you know, Elmer Fudd or something. He was laid back, you know, psychotic, because he had to get him on drugs and stuff to go ahead and keep his mind down. So I was talking to the colonel. And I said, Colonel, I said, that old boy right there, I'll tell you what, I was reading his file, and he done some crazy stuff. He said, oh, yeah, he did. And I said, what exactly you get locked up for? I mean, I see all the charges he had and everything. He said, well, him and his brother, both of them would throw it off. And they lived out there in Chaffalaya, which the basin out there, nothing but, I'm talking about, they did back in the 1800s over there. No electricity, nothing, just living in them old shacks. And anyway, so he went ahead and come home one day, and his brother and him together decided to kill his mama, to kill their mama. And they did. They murdered their mama. Just out of whatever reason they decided to kill her. And I think she was thrown off too. Anyway, so they went ahead and they killed her. Well, he killed his brother, and he cut his head off. And so he put it in the passenger seat, the truck. And he drove around figuring where he's going to bury his brother's head at. And he ended up going through the McDonald's drive-thru. He got hungry. And he went through the drive-thru, and he, you know, went to pick his meal up. And the girl, you know, and the attendant in the window looked inside there, seen that head, and sitting there. And she said, oh, my God. And she freaked out, and she went ahead and called the police. And, of course, they come got him and locked him up for double homicide. And, of course, he had all kind of other charges, too. But, I said, my goodness, what a way to go ahead and get locked up. And he got hungry. Going to bury that head, he got hungry. And then bring him to the drive-thru. Come on now.
And the ironic thing is that he had to go to prison and eat that big loaf of stuff.
I mean, that,
he was never hungry again.
I reckon not. I'll tell you what. And, you know, it's something. Now, of course, when I met him, you know, seen him, he was already at Camp C. Which was more of a trustee camp. So he'd worked his way up to trustee, and he's working in the carpenter shop over there and he can make them good. Beautiful things he can make, but a lot of them are that way. But
how do you work your way up from killing your mom and cutting your brother's head off and being a trustee to where they get you into the woodworking shop and give you something else you could use to cut somebody else's head off?
It's crazy. It makes no sense. It really doesn't.
Most of it is drug-induced. A lot of that's drug-induced, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of it is. And, you know, of course, when they end up going to court and everything like that, you know, their attorney will go ahead and talk things down, and they end up going ahead and dismissing some charges, going ahead and knocking some charges down, from a homicide to manslaughter or whatever, and they go ahead and that's how they do it. I mean, it's crazy how the legal system works. Here in Louisiana, it's all based on the old Napoleon law, so we have some strange, really wild laws here, and so it's hard to understand, but it's just how they do it. And of course, they stay there for life. They ain't going nowhere. Now, they do have a lot of, you know, the lifers that are going ahead and getting put to death. Of course, they're on death row, and death row is over at Camp F. And so it's funny how that is, because you have the biggest trustee camp of Camp F, the biggest trustee camp. That's the camp, the trustees for the wardens and everything are there at Camp F. And right behind the back and the front end, the back end of Camp F is death row, where all your inmates are that, you know, they're there for years before they get put to death. But That's where they hunker down and stay. And so it's kind of weird how they have it all set up. Again, Angola is not just one facility. It's many facilities on an 18,000 acres. It's just spread out. And some of those camps are a mile, 2 miles, 3 miles apart, you know? And so, cause y'all all that farmland out there where they grow crops and such, and they go ahead and, they're self-contained on that. But it's something. Now at night, here's something too. At night in all the dorms in Angola, they use blue light system. A blue light system because blue light, it helps relax the mind. So it kind of, you know, the psychotic part of it is it kind of keeps them mellowed out at nighttime, keeps the rapes down, murder down. Of course, it don't help a whole lot because we go through there and, you know, man, they kill each other still, so it doesn't help much. And Shanks, a lot of your inmates will go ahead and weave books and magazines under their blankets to go ahead when they sleep at night, so that way when inmate is up to jig them with a shank, you know, they'll have a chance to get away. And so it's some crazy things there. You know, and in the officers, you got one officer per dorm. You got 95 inmates in a dorm and one officer inside there with a radio. That's all he's got. He hasn't got a weapon. He hasn't got any handcuffs. He hasn't got anything at all. You have a key lieutenant that pretty much walks the hallways. And if someone knocks on the dorm door, an officer or an inmate, he unlocks. He has the only one that has the key to the dorm door and unlocks it. So it's actually a safety hazard for the one officer locked inside there. But it is how DOC works, you know, in different camps.
Wow. So that'd be a little scary. I got to admit.
One guy to 95,
you wouldn't stand much of a chance.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, and they say, well, these inmates that are inside these dorms, you know, are more the mild ones. Yeah, like the one that went ahead and cut his mama's head off and then his brother's head off. That's not too mild to me, you know. But then then one time I was making my rounds as a key lieutenant, making rounds, and I was coming down through there and heard this rustle going on in the captain station, went inside there, an inmate was inside there going, trying to kill the captain. So I took him down, went ahead and slammed him against the wall, brick wall, and knocked his teeth out. And broke his denture. So I took him down and everything. And so the captain, oh, man, he said, I appreciate you. I said, man, look, I said, I heard the ruckus come inside here. I just went ahead and got him. So we handcuffed him, took him to the hospital over there. They had their own hospital on Angola Medical Center, and took him over there for the inmates. And they doctored him up and took him to Camp J, locked him up over there.
How was he? Was he just trying to choke the guy out, or what? Did he have a weapon?
No, he had a shank. And he was trying to get him with that shank.
So you, being in the prison, didn't have a weapon.
No, all I had was handcuffs.
And
I had a
rake. So basically, you can't just shoot him. You got to beat him off.
You can't have a gun on a prison compound. Even the FBI or any kind of, you know, even outside law enforcement comes in the compound, they have to turn the weapons in, you know, in the gate before they go ahead and they can't bring it on a compound. But there's no weapons at all. Yeah, I mean, you have Fox 5 you can use to go ahead and spray them down with or something. But I didn't have time to do that. I just had to grab them and go ahead and deal with them and handle them.
Yeah, so basically, you're exposing yourself to the same shank the sergeant was
right. So it's you know, we kind of watch each other's back. It's kind of a brotherhood right there. When you're in law enforcement, you're watching your brother's back, and that's how you do it. And we always have to think, you know, in law enforcement, it doesn't matter whether you're sheriff department, whether you're state trooper, whether you work in DOC, FBI, DEA, whatever, you're working in law enforcement, the number one thing is public safety. That's the number one obligation is public safety. And so we have to always keep that in mind, you know, and that's what we got to do. But it's you know, I try to keep away from all the real gory stuff because I don't want to do that because y'all be puking everywhere if I tell you the story. I really don't. But I mean, it's crazy. We deal with, I mean, it's a horror story type stuff that you might see on sci-fi, but. Uh,
So did you ever, okay, well, let me ask you, was there ever a time where somebody attacked you and you had to take care of them or not?
I've had a few instances before where I've had to go ahead and deal with some inmates. Now, of course, when we take them down, here's the whole thing about it. When I'm as a key lieutenant, I'm authorized to carry handcuffs. So as the captain, you know, colonel and warden and that kind of thing, we can carry handcuffs. So I had one instance where I had to go ahead and deal with an inmate, went ahead and took him down and handcuffed him. Once you have him secured, you know, and in handcuffs, you know, you cannot, that's it. You know, DOC policy says you got to go ahead and back off. You can pick them up, go ahead and take them where you need to take them to, but you can no longer go ahead and whoop on them or, you know, use a level of force on them. You have to go ahead and just, you know, have them restrained and call for backup or handle them yourself, take them to cell block. And that's what you got to do. And I mean, yeah, I've had to do that. You know, it's just one of the things, part of the job you got to do. Inmates are always trying to run. Always trying to run games on your mind, you know, trying to run games on the newer officers and do that and talk them into bringing drugs in or something like that. And that causes a lot of problems there too. So, but, it's a game. It's a city in a city is all it is. And every prison is that way. I mean, even the smaller prisons I worked in are that way. The best prison I worked in before that was the safest prison for the officers and the inmates both was Phelps Correctional in DeQuincy, which was considered called Little Angola at the time. But it only had 1,000 inmates on it. But we had 800 officers, and it was very strict. It was the, you know, Marine Corps of DOC, and it was strict, and which was very good. And so a lot of inmates over there.
Now, why is that? Because the inmates. They had, or why?
Because the inmates there, only the inmates on that compound could only have no more than 10 years. Okay, a 10-year sentence. So they had more than 10 years, they have to go over DCI, or they had to go to Angola, or they had to go to Old Wolves. So those compounds there, they can have 30, 40, 50, 60 years, you know, and of course, lifers have to go to Angola. But every compound was set upon its own rules. But even the inmates that had 2 or 3, 4 years, those are the worst ones. Believe it or not, those are the worst ones. Those are the ones that, you know, the knuckleheads. We call them crash dummies. They get locked up for a couple of years, go out, commit another crime, come back in again. You see them the next year, they come back again. And those are the ones we had to deal with. And had one, you know, that I was, man, we're working over here at Phelps Correctional. I was a captain. So I was making my rounds, and I come out the back door of the kitchen on the walk. And one of my officers had an inmate there, and he had a big old hairdo. You know, they ain't allowed to have their hair so long. And he had him handcuffed, and he was taken. But the thing about it was, the inmate was wiggling like a wiggle worm, trying to get away from him, cussing him, screaming him. I went ahead and snatched him up. They all knew who I was. They call me Big Swole was my name in DOC here in Louisiana, because I've always been I was in bodybuilding for years, my younger years. So, you know, I love to deal with those inmates. So I'd go ahead and I'd snatch them up. I told the officer, I said, I got them from here. And I had them on chicken wing, and I went ahead and took them down the walkways about 300 yards across the walk, down the walk to the other side of the compound where the cell block was. And I hit him. He was going, hey, Captain, my back's hurting. I said, that's too bad, too sad, son. You act up with me, this is what you get. Catch a cut, take your lick. So I got down to the cell block, and he started, oh, I'm going to whoop you when you get these handcuffs on me. I said, son, you can get a chance. You're going to have your chance, I promise you. So I went to him on cell 13, lower left, and threw him inside there. And I told the officer at the desk, I said, go ahead and close the gate. I threw him inside there. I said, back up the bars, put your hands behind your back. Pull them handcuffs off. He refused to put his hands to the bars. He said, I'm going to ask you one more time, son. And he's there cussing me out and all this. And I said, fine. I said, I'll see you tomorrow morning. He said, you ain't leaving with his handcuffs on. My hand will swell up. I said, tomorrow morning, I'll see you. We'll get your mind right. Next morning, I came inside and made my rounds. And guess what? His hands were swollen up. He was crying like a little baby. I said, son, I'm going to ask you one more time. Put your hands in the beanhole, and I'm going to walk away for another day. He said, here you go, Captain, here you go. And he put his hands through there. I took handcuffs off. I said, we got your mind right yet? He said, yes, sir. I said, we can get your hair cut now. He said, no, sir, I ain't getting my hair cut. And I said, yes, you are. So he said, no, you ain't. He said, ain't no one cutting my hair. I said, oh, trust me.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I called up down to the station, the unit two, and I said, I want the barber down here with his equipment right now. Still block ASAP. Yes, sir. They sent him down there. Here he come. He said, okay. He said, I need a chair out here, Cap, so I can go ahead and cut his hair. I said, no one said you're going to cut his hair. He said, well, why'd you call me down here, Cap? I said, I called you down for your equipment. I'm going to cut his hair. Boy, man, looked at me. I said, I ain't no barber, son. I said, you're in for a shocker. Rolled that gate, and I went inside there, son, tackled him down, had him in a headlock, had him down. That electro shears went over that head, son. Nice and smooth and bald, son. He was telling us the boss and Mr. T all together. Yes, sir. And he was crying, my dude. I said, don't worry, son. I'll sweep it up, put an envelope for you when I'm done. And I did. Look, I mean, that's how we had to deal with these fellas. I mean, it was just that way, and it's just – you know, but I mean, we had to stay on top of it. You know, you're ex-law enforcement. You know what I'm talking about. You got to maintain that discipline at disciplinary level, and you have to at all times. And we have to go ahead and, you know, I don't dog them. I never went ahead and treated them wrong. You know, we'd joke around with the ones that was good, but when they wanted the women knuckleheads, we dealt with them, you know, how you had to do it. Mm-hmm.
Howard, did you ever give anybody a headlock haircut?
I mean, I'm gonna tell you, probably not really the worst thing. When he keeps saying beanhole, I'll tell you what it reminds me of. Yeah. Now you guys, you don't know what I'm talking about. You had those steel doors. I don't even remember who made them jails, but you remember had the big Folgers flat keys. Remember what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. They were actually made in Ohio, I believe, weren't they?
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. When I say the Folgers flat keys.
Right.
So right there by our booking desk, we had a holding one, holding two, and it was concrete, right? That's about the best way I can explain it. The bunks, there was three bunks. You know, there was a little toilet and sink combination out of stainless steel. You know how they look.
Oh, yeah.
And then there was a bunk against the other three walls, and it was poured concrete about 2 foot off the ground, right? So there was nothing in there, and that's where you put the people that was causing you trouble or had issues. Or whatever, you know what I mean? And you give them, you start off giving them the benefit of the doubt, and you always give them, we'd give them it's about a 3.5-inch foam mattress to lay down. I don't even know what it was called, but it was foam and had a vinyl nylon outside, and the blankets were like army blankets, what I call army blankets, some old wooden army. Yeah, and you give them some army blankets. So anyway, police department bought this crazy guy in. I don't remember what his issue was, but we put him in holding one. Usually when the police department would show up, there's a difference. If you had rural law enforcement, if you had a deputy sheriff or state trooper that was out there by himself, he really doesn't. He handles people different than the police department that could have 9 police officers there in 2 minutes. You know what I mean? So the police, the sheriffs and the troopers almost never brought anybody wound up because they can't let people get out of control, or they don't mess with people out there on the side of the road by themselves because they'll get their ass kicked.
Right.
So, but the police department's a whole nother animal. So these police department, I look at their mirror, you know, dispatcher called me and say, hey, they're bringing one up. So you look in the alley, and when you see 3, 4, 5 black and white cop cars pull up, you know something's up. They pull them right into the Sally Port, pull this dude out, cuffed behind the back, hog tied, you know what I mean? And they carry him in, 4 of them carry him in, you know what I'm saying? Face down. So what you end up doing is you try to smooth it out, because you got to get your booking information a lot of times. And so anyway, this guy went and holding one. He was mad and drunk when we put him in there, and it didn't get no better. He was just insane. Well, he's got a panic button that he can push in there that'll call out. You know what I mean? And then there's different people within the institution. It's not really a true institution. It's a jail on the back of a big office building. So, but when he pushes that emergency button, the people in dispatch and the people upstairs, it freezes their screen where they can't do anything until they clear that emergency button. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So he keeps every 2 or 3 minutes, he's got to push that button and he's wanting out. He's wanting his phone call. He knows his rights. This is bullshit. You know, he's just fucking insane. The problem is it was the summertime, and you can take a jail in the city in the summertime. It can be brutal because there's 3, 4, 5 of them. You'd bring them in, and we had pipe benches, and they would bring them inside, and you're cuffing them to pipe benches away from each other until you can get them all sorted out. You know, they're stacking up like cordwood, kind of, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And, he kept pushing that button, and dispatcher's calling me saying, hey, can't you do something? And I'm saying, hey, dude, don't push that button no more. On and on and on and on. Well, I'll never forget these two troopers I ended up working with later brought these drunks in at the time that I walked over there, and he pushed that emergency button, and I opened that. Remember, it had a metal peephole door that you'd open, you could see in. You know what I mean?
Right.
I opened that door, and he's face-to-face with him, and he's yelling some bunch of shit, and I said, hey, if you push that button one more time, the only thing I got is a base. And this is about probably 92. And remember when pepper spray first come out? You know what I mean? You just thought it worked on everything. Miracle. It was a miracle medicine.
100,000 Schofields. It wasn't much.
Yeah. It was like miracle medicine, right?
Right.
When I see these people, these cops now, these shooting dogs, I'm thinking, don't they give y'all pepper spray? Because you hit a dog with pepper spray and he'll never walk near a uniform again. So I walked over there and opened that door, that little peephole, and I said, you hit that button one more time, I'm going to mace the shit out of you.
Yep.
And he starts, screw you, blah, 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 I know my rights. Wait. I don't. And I closed that peephole door, and I was walking back to my desk, and this trooper says, real Johnny Law, John Dudley Do-Right, says, I don't think you can mace him for that. And I said, for what? And he goes, he's got to be a threat. He starts telling me something, and the other troopers watching him tell me this story, and that dude hit that panic button again. And I was walking around the booking desk, and I grabbed that brand new OC can. You know, it was red, and I was shaking it like rain. And I said, what'd you say, Dave? That's his trooper. He said, I don't think you can face him just for nothing. And I put that Folger's flat key in that chuck hole door, and I opened it. And you know what I'm talking about? I said, chuck hole door about knee high. And I pulled that. I opened that little chuck hole and I looked in there and looked up and I said, hey, and he reached down there and he started arguing as a case about 3-inch on chuck hole. And I went, and I sprayed him like I was spraying a freight car down the rail yard. You know, if I was tapping it, you know what I mean? And I'm telling you what, that hit him in the face. And it looked like I hit him with a fastball, 100-mile-an-hour fastball or something. He fell right down there squalling and screaming. And I shut that chuck hole, and I looked at that trooper, and I said, what did you say again, Dave? And he said, I don't think you can do that. I don't think that's right. And I said, I didn't ask him if it was right. I told him if he did it, I'd do it. Of course, the other trooper says, hey, I respect it. You told him. So, hey. Next thing you know, now, of course, the dispatch and all these people in this whole realm that's been begging me to do something, they got him on the big screen, and he's over there trying to wash his face in the toilet. He's finding his way. He's Helen Keller'd his way around that concrete cell until he found that stainless steel toilet. And, and he never hit that call button again.
Yes, sir. Hey, you know what? And that's exactly it. And that's exactly it. And as far as, you know, not, you know, having the right to spray them, that's, you know, you did the exact right thing, because DOC policy states, you know, after three direct verbal orders, man, if they disrespect that, you can put it on. And, you know, so, and I'll tell you what, they got that Fox 5. Well, before I retired, I had that Fox 5, which was 5.4 million Schofields. It was woo. And so that stuff we had right there, we had to get sprayed with it, you know, because in case an inmate died, you know.
Oh, yeah, I've been court, sprayed, uh-huh.
You know, we had to say, well, we didn't get, you know, we didn't. But any case, so we didn't die. So, you know, it, and so it wasn't considered a late lethal weapon. Some states it is, but Fox 5 was bad stuff. We sprayed, oh, wow. I man, in the cell block, we had the fogger. I'd use that fogger. Yeah. I'd tell all them inmates, woo, open it up.
There you go. Mean it was a fogger with pepper spray? Is a pepper spray fogger?
Yeah, buddy.
Ooh, how can I get one of those for the mail truck? Can I get one of those? Like,
hey, now you're like talking about the big can. You're not talking about the one that looks like a leaf blower.
No, that little small one is a screamer. That big one is the fogger, and that thing right there fills the whole room up. The whole room would get full with that stuff, and then and coughing and puking everywhere because you can't breathe, and it burn, and it would get them all right. And I'd tell them, I said, look, I'm gonna tell you right now, if you don't go ahead and get your mind right, I'm gonna empty this thing out in this block, and everybody finna go ahead and catch their cut. And all the inmates next to the cells around there will go ahead and start putting towels around their faces. You know, they knew what time it was.
At the time, they're telling him to back the fuck up and do what he's told because they don't want it.
No, they don't. And they're cussing and yelling. And of course, you know, when they all get out of the block, of course, they're going to work on them for going ahead and, you know, and putting them in that situation. Yeah. So, you know, but yeah, you got some knuckleheads inside there, but I know what you're talking about. And
Hey, Shane, he's talking about a fogger, they got one that looks like a leaf blower that they put that tear gas in a big canister and in it starts. Oh, yeah. It's got a motor, doesn't it? It's got like a leaf blower, like a two-stroke.
Sure does. That's the big one. Yeah. That's
see
the big
all.
One.
All I can imagine is mounting one of those on the top of a mail truck, kind of like a turret on a tank. There. It's cutting a hole up there and just going down the neighborhood and shooting all the dogs one time.
It'll work. It'll do it. Hey, I'm gonna tell you what. Yeah, and it's just I know I was having to do a class. I was having to do a class for the officers on my shift, and I had to spray them. So all the captains had to spray their officers on their shift. So I went ahead and I lined them up. I said, "This Fox 5 right here," and we had freeze plus P. We had, which was pretty rough, but that's only 2.5 million scope. This was 5.4. I said, gentlemen, I said, you know, hold on to your ass. I said, this right here is going to get your mind right real quick. Oh, I can handle it. And we, okay. I'd hit them across the eyes with it. Boy, I'll tell you what, they'd run around like chickens head cut off. And the first thing they want to do is go to the restroom and go ahead and put water in their face. That's the worst thing to do. That reactivates that stuff. And, they went home, and their wives would call me up. Captain, hey, look, my husband, he can't sleep tonight. His face is burning. And I tell him, I said, get some milk and put it in his face and help dilute it. I said, man, look, don't put water, you know, and I, you know, because water will reactivate it. He won't sleep at all. So, you know, but it was just, we all had to do it. And, but I'll tell you what, my goodness. And of course, you know, we hit by, you know, beanbag rounds and ball rounds and all that kind of stuff, paintball rounds and everything else we had to get hit with. You know, it was on tack team, so we had to get hit with all that stuff too. And it was just, you know, getting ready for what we had to deal with. And we went to all the different compounds and dealt with the inmates there. But
let me ask you this, Steve. Was there anybody famous locked up at Angola while you were there?
Actually, yes, there was. It's funny you said that. The little munchkin feller. I can't remember his name now, but he played in a couple of Clint Eastwood movies. He played in Tightrope with Clint Eastwood that was made in New Orleans. He owned a bar in the movie, and a little short guy, I guess you call him Dwarf. And so he was there at Phelps Correctional Center when I was there. And I when I first seen him, I was working in a garment factory called the Garment Factory, with all the inmates made clothing there, stuff, made their own clothing and that kind of stuff, their jumpsuits and such, jeans and jackets. So anyway, I was there making rounds, and I got time for them to go ahead and leave that afternoon at 3:30, thinking back in the dorms for count. So we had to shake them down before they come out door. And I was over there looking, and I seen this little short dude, and I picked him up, put him on the desk, and shook him down. Boy, everyone started busting out laughing. I said, man, I ain't killing my back over this. So, and it just, So anyway, so I thought I recognized him, but I wasn't for sure because I'm a big John Wayne Clint Eastwood fan. So I seen all the movies. And so the colonel come to me and he said, "You know who that inmate is?" And I said, "No." And he said, "He plays an inmate in movies with Clint Eastwood." I said, "Really? He helps co-write them and stuff." And I go, "Wow." So I had to watch a tightrope that night to go ahead and say, sure enough, he was in it. And I said, "Well." And so we had him there. Country singer. Now, he wasn't there when I was there. He wrote Last Teardrop Falls. He was Spanish, and he was a country singer back in the 60s and the 70s. If I said his name, you know what I'm talking about. He wrote The Last Teardrop Falls.
Freddie Fender.
He was locked up there. Not when I was there. He was there before I was there. But he was locked up there, and he actually, it was a tree right next to the kitchen on Phelps compound where he actually sat down and wrote that song. He was locked there in 63, I think it was. He wrote that song, Last Teardrop Falls. And so,
really? I mean, that's good. Prison, some guys have written some pretty good songs in prison.
Oh, I tell you what, there were some rappers there, did the stuff, a lot of rapping and stuff like that, and all that kind of thing. And I mean, it was we had a mixture of people there. We had preachers there who were locked up. We had doctors there who were locked up. We had lawyers there who were locked up. We even had one. We had a father, son, father and son that were locked up together there. And we had twins, two brothers that you couldn't tell them apart. And the only way we can tell them apart by DOC number. That was it.
And, oh my gosh.
So it was something. And then we had all kind of things. I think one of the funniest times I had was I was doing middle of count time, and I was in the kitchen in my office doing count, and my lieutenant who worked under me, he was making rounds in the cell block. Now the cell block was fixed to be refurbished, so it was emptied out. It was completely empty. No one was there. No officers, no inmates, nothing. He's making rounds through there. We've had a lot of instances, ghosts and that kind of thing in there, people seeing ghosts and hearing noises and everything. Well, me and my lieutenant, we played jokes with each other all the time, try to keep things light. So, of course, Captain Keys, you got every kind of key you got on there. You got 20 of them big old keys on there rattling together in brass keys and making a racket. You hear him come a mile away. Well, anyway, he's making rounds up there, and I was doing the count in the kitchen across the compound. He called me up, said, "Cap, where you at?" And I said, "I'm over here in the kitchen." "No, you ain't. You're in the cell block with me." I said, "No, I ain't. I'm doing count in the kitchen." He said, "No, I hear your keys rattling, son." He said, you playing a joke on me." I said, "No, sir, I ain't playing a joke on you. I'm doing count in the kitchen." And he said, "I hear your keys. Whose keys is it?" I said, "Well, go look and find out." Well, he went around because it was double-tier cell block. He went up lower right, lower left. And he went upper right, upper left, looking for wherever it was. He couldn't find nobody. So he come back to the kitchen. He said, "Cap," he said, "I swear I heard keys rattling in that kitchen, in that cell block." I said, "People hear things all the time inside there." And he said, "It wasn't you." I said, "Well, I'm right here. Been here all along." And he said, "Oh, my God, is that ghost?" And I said, "I reckon so." But, hey, I mean, there's some things that would step behind me in the warehouse. I've heard all kind of things, and we've heard all kind of stories. And so because Phelps Compound has been there since 1954. It was built in 54. So there's been a lot of murders there, killings and inmates shanked and officers killed and all kind of stuff happened there. So now in their gym, they have a gym called the Wellness Center back on the back part of the compound. And I'd work out every time I get off shift. So I go in there and work out, and I'm by myself because it's hard to, I try to train some of the officers, but some of them just, trying to get the guys who want to work out after work is hard because they're ready to go home. I don't blame them, but I'll working out my life. So I just do it as a habit. Well, I'm inside there, and one of the benches had wheels on it. Metal wheels on it, and if you kick it, I've done it by accident myself working out, and I walk by it and kick it, and it makes a real bad ringing sound. You can hear it through the whole room. Well, I'm in the bathroom ready to go, washing my hands, doors open, I'm fitting to leave, and I heard that hit like someone kicked two or three times, and I looked out there, no one's there. And I heard it again, looked out there, no one's there. I kept hearing it over and over again, no one's there. So there's strange things that happened on there, we've all seen spooky things and everything, but I mean, there's things happen. I mean, you just, but I mean, we just do things we have to do on that compound. And of course, you know, you're trained and taught all the compounds. You're trained and taught, hey, if inmate tries to escape, you know, and he has a knife to the warden's neck, the throat, and he wants to get out the gate, you know, and escape. You let him out or not? We can't. It's public safety, number one thing we have to do. You know, we can't let him out. There's some crazy things, and it's just looking back on it, you know, I don't miss it at all. My blood pressure was so high back then, I'd go off. I had one instance. What happened one time where, you know, I was doing my count, and we had a dorm way in the back called New Dorm 2, and it had four dorms in it, Alpha Bravo Charlie Delta dorms, and 35 inmates in each dorm. And anyway, they go, my officer over there calls me up. He says the inmate threatened him and he won't catch his rack for count time. He's telling me he's gonna kill me and my whole family. Well, I jumped out when he hit, got my lieutenant online on the radio. I said, hey, LT, I said, you better beat me to New Dorm 2, son, because I'm going like a train. You hear me? And I get there first. You know me, what I'm gonna do. He knew I was old school DOC, so he knew he had to go ahead and get ahead of me, because Marty, my best friend in the world, Marty Franks, he was my lieutenant, and he went ahead and he knew my temperament, so he'd get in front of the inmates before I'd get him. My goodness. So he threatened my officer. So ran down and he met me on the walk going down that way, and he got ahead of me. I got it, Captain. He got in front of me, and he got inside there, and we went inside and grabbed that inmate. I got him, Captain. He ain't going nowhere. Well, I grabbed that inmate up by the throat, threw him against the wall out of Marty's hands, and I hit him against that wall. It's a shower room. I said, you ain't going to threaten my officers again. I'll rip your heart out right now, right in front of everybody here in this dorm. Boy, I was going, and I said, calm down, Captain, calm down. He kept saying, calm down, Captain. And finally, I went ahead and I said, lock him up, put him in that cell block, and get him out of my face. I mean, I can't deal with when someone would go ahead, an inmate would threaten my officers. So I went ahead, and Marty he knew how to control his temper. I didn't. Thank God for him. I would have hurt him. I would have hurt that inmate. And Marty's the one that, you know, catches me. Well, this one incident that happened, me and him were sitting in the cap station, and we were sitting there, it was kind of getting towards the end of the day, and we got a call going down to the shakedown room in Sally, outside of Sallyport. And when the inmates come in, they got to get shook down and come in, and they come to the security gate. And we got some guys here don't want to shake down, Cap. So me and Marty went down there. We said, here we come. We coming down. And they called us the Road Warriors. We come down. They knew we were going to handle business. We got down there, and we had five stalls there, five inmates going ahead. And the other four were shaking down like they're supposed to. They weren't supposed to do this. Fifth one wouldn't do it. I said, turn around, bend over. And he wouldn't do it. He said, we didn't do it in Angola. I said, I worked in Angola. Lie to me again, inmate. And he said, well, I ain't doing it. I said, you're going to do it right now. Put my hand in my handcuffs. I'm going to give you one more direct verbal order, and I'm going to cuff you and take you to the cell block, son. I'm going to deal with you. And he said, I ain't doing it. Boy, Marty got ahead of me. He got right in front of me, and he blocked me. And he said, I got this cap. Boy, I took the refrigerator, and I threw it, because he had a refrigerator over there for the officers. I threw it across the room. I tore the table up. I was going crazy. I forgot the camera was there, you know, watching. So anyway, no one watched the cameras, you know. So we go ahead and we flew it off and everything else, and I had to write it up what happened to the refrigerator. But anyway, about three months later, one of the officers that I worked with, who was one of the superior officers over in Angola, who knew me real well, he came over as number three warden at Phelps. And so he went over there and he called me in the office. We called him the cameraman in Angola. He watched the cameras. He watched the officers and the cameras more than he watched the inmates. And he called me in the office and said, hey, Steve, how you doing, son? I said, good deal. How you doing here? You come over here? He said, yeah, number three warden here, man. And he said, have a seat real quick. I said, sure. He said, looking at the camera here, went back a few months, and I kind of seen something interested me. And I said, what's that? And he said, well, look at this. Explain it to me. And I looked at it, and all of a sudden, here's me going ahead and throwing the refrigerator across the room and doing all the crap. And I'm getting mad at the inmate. And so he said, what's that all about, Steve? You ain't changed to the Angola, have you? And I said, oh, man. He said, I need to put you in anger management. I said, no, I'm all right, buddy. I'm all right, Randy. He said, okay. He said, he's asking. He said, can you calm it down a little bit? I said, yeah, we can calm it down. He said, Angola. I said, I understand.
So anger management.
That's what I was just thinking. Anger management.
When I went off, I mean, the inmates knew when I'm coming in that dorm, if someone calls and for backup and I'm coming inside, the inmates knew they better have it on their mind. Because I'm coming inside there, I'm going to tear that dorm up and I'm going to get mines right real quick. And so they knew how I was. And so I had to understand I wasn't an Angolan. And once you work in the state penitentiary, it's a whole different mindset. And you go to these smaller prisons, it's a whole different mindset. And you can't do the things that you get away with over at a penitentiary at a smaller prison. So I had to regroup my mind, if you understand what I'm saying, and kind of, because I had to deal with some inmates. And so, you know, over at Phelps and over, you know, ABC and that kind of thing, we had to really kind of, you know, be different, a different mindset. And I couldn't re-gear. You know, I was old school DOC. All I knew was how to go ahead and I'd give them a direct verbal order. They didn't do it or they cussed me out. I'm coming in like an army, you know, and I'm going to take care of business. And so it was just, I had to redo it now, you know. But in any case, so I loved my job. I loved what I did. And I gave 100% to it. But when I finally retired, it came down to me retire when the prison nurse, you know, she was checking my blood pressure one day, said it was 187 over 120. She said, it's time for you to retire, son.
Holy crap.
That's how fired I would get. And so I just said, finally, I said, that's it. My years are in. I'm going ahead and putting in my retirement package, and I retired. And, you know, ever since, it's been a few years, and I've calmed down so much. But man, I tell you what, my wife, we're talking about the bosses, wives being bosses. My wife, oh son, when I came in that front door of that house, I better leave all that back in the prison. that frying pan come up, son. I'm gonna work on that head, son. You go ahead and start mouthing off to me.
You better hope none of those guys you worked with or you were in prison are listening to this episode and find out that your wife was in trouble.
She controlled. Well, they know when we go in town, we're going through the Ritter, a small town outside of Maryville. We go there where Walmart's at because Maryville ain't got but a dollar store, small little town, 500 people. So 20 miles away, we go to the Ritter where the Walmart is. We go inside there, ain't but about 8,000 people in that town. But we walk through there, and all my wife and me walking through there, and we'll hear, "Hey, Big Swole!" And I look around, and you know, it's one of the inmates that I was there and got out, or it's one of the officers. It worked for me or whatever. And you know, it's just, we hear it all the time. And
your wife smacks you in the back of the head and says, I didn't tell you, look.
She's straight. But if she was here right now, me telling these prison stories, but she can work on me because she hates when I do that and get wired up. But, it just brings me back to the day, you know, back in the day where, you know, I had to deal with all the stuff and you kind of get wired out. But, man, I tell you what, But in the same token, we had inmates there that did what they were supposed to do. They did what they were supposed to do. They went ahead and acted right. And those inmates there, my orderlies and stuff, I took care of them. You know, hey, you know, we'd laugh and joke, all that kind of thing, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, the inmate was doing right. I didn't mess with them. I wasn't a, you know, kind of officer that messed with inmates. I didn't do that. And I taught my officers on my shift. I said, look, I said, you know, they got to be dealt with. You deal with them. You know, if we got to go in the cell block, I call you to go with the cell block with me. You better have it on your mind. We're going to deal with some stuff. I said, however, I don't want to catch any of you going ahead and dogging an inmate that doesn't deserve it. You know, we don't operate like that.
I'll tell you what, Steve, getting to know you here over the last couple months, it's hard for me to believe that you'd ever be that fired up to throw a refrigerator across the room.
Well, it's all on the camera and everyone, since I retired, when I go back, my son is actually a warden over there now at the same compound. And he says, oh man, he said, Pop, they talk about you all the time. You know, how that, you know, camera, when you threw it across the room. Well, the end of the story was the warden went ahead. He went ahead and brought that refrigerator up front, put it in the roll call room in the front of the prison, and he put a sign on it that said PC. And you know what PC means, specific custody. And it was a joke, you know, on, you know, everyone. So he kind of threw me out there under the bus, said, oh, this is for old Swole right there, Cap Swole. He can't control his temper. So he went ahead and tacked his refrigerator. It's on PC. So I had to
looked at him and said, I am under control. I meant to do that.
Better than refrigerated.
Hold on, now, hold on. Hey, now, tell me if I'm wrong here. You had to have a little showmanship to bluff them sometimes because you're dealing with killers.
You did.
So
you
had some of these people, you had to bluff them a little bit because you ain't a killer like they are.
Right. And you had a little, and the mindset that you were control. You were in control. You controlled the situation. You controlled what was going on. And you're exactly right. And you know, when you're on that compound and, you know, I had officers tell me all the time, newer officers, well, when it's chow time and I'm trying to escort these, you know, these inmates to the chow hall and they don't want to do what I tell them to do. He said, I don't understand how one man can control 60. I said, it's very simple. Let me show you and give me an idea. And I would sit there and I'd belt it out there. Hey, you know, and I'd go ahead and you could hear me all across the compound. Line it up, you know, line it up. I don't want to hear a word. Keep it straight, you know. And that was it. And you marched them like soldiers down to the chow hall. I said, you got to let them know who's in control. You're in charge. You run this. You're in control of this. They don't control a dang thing. You know, and that's how you had to do the mindset. You had to do it. And it was, you know, that's just how it was in DOC. You know what I'm talking about, you know?
Hey, I got to think there was less paperwork, though, for you throwing a refrigerator across the room than throwing an inmate across the room.
Yeah. I mean, if you hurt an inmate, I mean, then you got a lot of paperwork. Dude, now you got to, you know, you're dealing with level of force now, and you upped it. You went ahead and had to put hands on an inmate, and you got to do reports, and, you know, you got to write it up and everything. And it's got to be written up right and everything else. So it can be a headache, and you got to do these reports, and you got to make copies of them, and you got to fill out all this other mess, and it's something. So, you know, you don't want to really put hands on unless you have to, but you have to do what you got to do, you know.
I think listening to your stories about that place, I think everybody listening will have a greater appreciation for what the guys do behind the walls of those prisons to keep everybody safe, for sure. You know, and I know and I know we got a lot of people that listen that do that job and will be shaking their head. Oh yeah, I remember a time like that, right? You know,
But you have to get that, you know, in that mindset, right? That's what it is.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to come back on and share some of these stories. I know, Howard, what do you, I mean, this guy.
I like it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, he kind of reminds me of some of the guys I used to work with back, especially when I was young. Yeah. Heck yeah.
Made you feel all warm and fuzzy, right? It's kind of.
Well, I don't know about that. But it takes a certain kind of person to work around. When I say bad people, I mean real bad. I mean, he's not kidding when he says bad people. There is some bad people.
Oh yeah.
You know, and people nowadays they're going like, well, shit, I don't want to work with him because he's rude on Facebook or he posts some bad stuff. I mean, these people cut their mama's head off and then drive through the drive-thru.
You're hungry. Right,
man. I mean, they're in a whole different world.
Yes, sir. You're right.
Oh, man.
You're right.
Well, on that note, we'll say thank you, Steve, for all your service prior to the law enforcement for the stuff you did in the Army. And, thanks for keeping everybody. Thanks for keeping those people down in Louisiana, not letting them come to Ohio.
There you go. Yeah. We're trying to keep them here. Here you go. Yes, sir. I'll tell you what.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of the From the Shadows podcast. Until next time, never shy away from the darkness or what may be lurking in the shadows. We are out.
God only knows what's hiding in our shadows.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.